do, and that was one of the great weapons that I had. But I spent many of the years just seeking solidarity and seeking to help the people in Chile. And then I began to write. I began to write, and it really created, I think, it created this person you're looking at as a sort of a bridge. I feel as if I'm a bridge between Spanish and English, between United States and Chile, between the first and the third worlds, between readers everywhere in that sense. And I think that if I had stayed in Chile, which I really wish I had, I asked the people in Chile, let me stay. And they said, you want to write the great novel of the resistance, get out of here. You're so valuable outside. And they were right, you know? So I went out and it changed me too much. It changed me to such a degree and the country changed so much that I ended up leaving Chile after I went back in 1990, which of course is also in the novel, The Suicide Museum. Well, but I repent of having been in exile, but I don't repent of the results that happened to me. I'm so sorry for all those who died in my place.
Ariel Dorfman, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Duke University Professor Emeritus, author of The Suicide Museum. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
This is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience, KBOO, Portland.
This program is made possible by KBOO members and the Portland Bureau of Transportation, currently seeking input from those living and working in or who regularly visit the Boise neighborhood about parking issues. Survey responses will help inform a parking management plan for the area. More information at portland.gov/Boise Parking.
Support for this program comes from KBOO members and the Urban League of Portland, hosting the Equal Opportunity Dinner Celebration, honoring Black wealth, Black creators, and Black culture, with a special presentation to Rukaya Adams, Thursday, September 28th, at the Oregon Convention Center in Portland. More information is available at ulpdx.org.
Good morning. You are listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO FM, 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis. We are broadcasting on today, the 11th of September, 2023. It is 8 a.m., well, actually 8.02 a.m., I'm Cecil Prescott, and I'm here with the one and only Celeste Carey.
Good morning. How are you doing, Cecil?
I'm doing fantastic on a Monday morning. So I'm just stretching, trying to start the day off as we should. And so let's begin.
Well, this is no ordinary Monday. I mean, well, you know, no Monday is ordinary.
No.
This is September 11th. This is 9-1-1.
Yeah, we're having a little bit of problem with your audio, Celeste, so we'll try to work on that. It's September 11th is the anniversary of many of you know of the in 2001, the attack on the Pentagon, the World Trade Center, and three planes. So this is the 22nd anniversary of that, and it was interesting. I watched a program last evening, and I thought, you know, seen that, been there, done it. And it was amazing. It was a program about firefighters who went into the World Trade Center's and hearing the radio as they talk to one another, and going into the building knowing that they would die, it was pretty impactful. And of course, those of us of a certain generation also remember September 11th as the anniversary, and this year is the 50th anniversary of the overthrow of the elected government of Chile and Salvador Allende in a CIA finance coup. Not only finance, but train the participants in a coup that brought insurmountable destruction and hardship on the people of Chile for many years, and the dictatorship of Pinochet continued to wreak havoc on the peoples of the country and the region for many years. And those of you who were able to listen to part of the program of Democracy Now, and certainly there are articles on it. You can find out more about the legacy and the history of 9/11. Remembering what happened 50 years ago, and also remembering what happened 22 years ago. You are listening to More Talk Radio. Talking to our engineer Ray, and we're having some problems with the with our audio.
Is it sounding any better now?
It's better now, Celeste. Hello.
Okay, good. Good. So, yes, there's that. And another topic that we had discussed was an interesting, I don't know if I want to call it impasse, standoff, or just mass cluster confusion. But it was the protest led by climate change activists as they straddled the highway that people who were trying to attend the Burning Man concert needed. And it was interesting in that I watched the video as well as read the article in the Guardian newspaper, the Burning Man Festival, and the title of it, the article says a lot in that it says Burning Man attendees roadblocked by climate activists. They have a privileged mindset. And these protesters basically seem to have assumed that they had kindred spirits while protesting climate change, but not just climate change in general. The group which blocked the two-lane highway on the way to the Burning Man were protesters from Seven Circles, and that's a coalition of activists that represent climate change groups like Extinction Rebellion and Scientist Rebellion and Rave Revolution. And they not only, as I said, were protesting climate change in general, but very specifically the fact that Burning Man had been pretty much usurped and gentrified, and they were saying, you know, we want to ban jets, we want to ban single-use plastic, generators and propane use.
Now, let's just go back, because I don't want people to miss what you said. You know, of course, you know, single-use plastic and stuff like that. But the first thing you said they wanted to ban was jets.
Yeah, private jets.
Private jets. I'm just sit with that. For those of you who are purists, who are, you know, old hippies who thought of Burning Man in 1986 as, oh, yes, this is our time to relive and recreate an alternative universe. It has morphed into a Silicon Valley executive vacation trip where they come in with their private jets.
Okay. Yeah, kind of like a bro bacchanal, you know, and not just private jets, but these behemoth RVs and what have you.
Yeah.
Now, bear in mind, when you get there, you can't have a whole lot of, you bring your own food, your own water, you know, no money is spent. There's not supposed to be any advertising. Mm. You know, it's supposed to be kind of a pure anarchist celebration of art, music, community, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's not GP rated or PG rated either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so and that's important because people expect to get their party on. You know, that's one of the things that has kind of morphed into it. But what I thought was really interesting is if you, by some chance, happen to have seen the YouTube video, you would see an interesting clash of culture and a lot of, as they said, privileged mindset and assumptions made. Because I believe listening to the way the protesters encountered and spoke to the Burning Man attendees and people who lived in the area who were trying to get to work or just travel in between who weren't going to Burning Man or maybe had to get their kids to school or something. You know, there was a lot of ire and just general frustration and anger. And I thought, this is really interesting. Apparently, these people didn't do their research or they just thought everybody who attended this would be okay with this blockade. And I was telling Cecil, it fascinated me because it seemed as though the expectation was, well, we're protesters and we're counterculture just like you are. We're left-leaning and we're progressive just like you are. Surely you would support this.
Well, you know, and I think I might differ a little bit than you in terms of perspective, Celeste, in terms of these protesters, because I think by nature, if protests make things inconvenient, inconvenient for all people, for those who are the focus of the protest and those surrounding. Although we love and honor people like Ella Baker and John Lewis,
uh-huh.
They were protesters who, if you affect, if you make things inconvenient, you take things out of order. So the fact that some people who were trying to get to work were, I don't want to say inconvenienced because that sounds like privileged, were unable to get to work, people should recognize that that's the nature of protest, that all people, and the fact that, you know, some people just wanted to get home from work and Rosa Parks made things inconvenient by sitting in the wrong part. I just wanted to get home from work. I've worked all day, and why are you making a problem? Okay, I'm sorry, Celeste.
Well, No, I'm not sorry.
Continue.
Yes. I mean, I think that's a good point because I can see the protesters, especially when you frame it with somebody like Rosa Parks, you know, Rosa saying, you know, I just want to ride the bus. Why are you making it hard for me? You know? But it was an interesting standoff. But, you know, I want to you know, put a pin in that because we're going to come back and kind of open that up a little bit more. But we also mentioned the fact that this was an anniversary for the 9/11 attack. And early in our show history, we kind of put a moratorium, in a sense, on discussing it because we had so many people approaching it from what could be called a conspiratorial perspective. And there are a lot of things that have come out about it, but I don't want to focus necessarily on that. And I was wondering, you know, as well as to, you know, talk about the experiences of people who had been there and the firefighters, if we wanted to talk about the kind of trauma that event left in its wake and how we have recovered, if we recovered any amount of innocence, you know, a return innocence to innocence, or is that innocence just gone now? You know, have we lost any sense of a feeling of stability and I don't want to say global security, because that's kind of, there is none. There never was. we were naive, I think, as a nation, and sometimes we're very naive species when it comes to looking at this thing called safety, you know, and security. But I'm curious as to how people have adapted that, their attitudes about the relative safety and bliss that we go through in our daily lives, not thinking about the dangers that's out there. Now, it's true, the pandemic, the COVID also interrupted any idea we might have of security. And so it impacted not just that particular generation that lived through it, as you mentioned, Cecil, but COVID impacted all of us. And so I guess what I'm looking at is, where are we when it comes to these really high-intensity, anxiety-producing events in terms of our ideas of safety and security, and I'll even say, and this is kind of corny, sanctity of our quote-unquote boundaries.
Say that. I'm not sure I understood the last part. Sanctity
well,
of our boundaries.
I don't know. As our national boundaries, you know, because when we were told that this was a foreign attack on American soil, that was just unheard of in the American psyche. I mean, not since Pearl Harbor have we endured something like that. And Americans, let me rephrase it, United States citizens. United States
residents.
Residents, yes. Fancy this country to be impenetrable. And it comes out of a kind of a privileged attitude, I think. I don't necessarily support it, because our so-called security comes at the expense of the security of much of the rest of the civilized world. And by civilized, I mean the entire world. I'm not talking about the parts where people don't live.
And
I'm talking about where people live.
And therein lies the connection, not by accident of September 11th in terms of security. September 11th, 1973, which in its brutal impact, it revealed the brutal nature of U.S. militarism and U.S. overreach, so that it, in terms of CIA training and orchestrating the coup, the overthrow, the assassination of a democratically elected government in Chile that the United States thought that our country had the right and the authority to cross beyond boundaries and, you know, living out the Monroe Doctrine. This hemisphere is ours. And the fact that that 50 years after that, and on September 11th, not 50 years, and 28 years later, that the United States would be the recipient of being attacked, says something about what do we mean by security and how are we safe?
You know, and it's kind of, no, it's not kind of, it's very arrogant for us to demand that we have security because, in a sense, to me, at least to me, that condones anything our government does to put us in this position of assumed superiority so that we get to be safe. We're not concerned with anybody else's safe. And that attitude is manifested by folks who are disdainful of climate change refugees, you know. And having spoken to some young people who and some people who were older people who were from the Marshall Islands and were frightened of climate change and, you know, their home being swept away into the sea, you know, I can appreciate how arrogant this country must seem and how and I guess in a sense, you know, that same arrogance is what we were talking about in the gentrification of what used to be an anarchist, you know, art festival / bacchanal, you know?
Yeah, indeed. And one other addition I would like to observation is in terms of this looking at Burning Man and what all this means, and the fact that the clash between climate protesters and participants, and as you pointed out, ordinary workers who were just trying to get to their jobs, reveals the continuing clash of our society as we try to figure out what does it mean to create a good environment for all. And so I think, for example, the Burning Man and the clash that we shared in terms of the protesters and the participants reveal the nature of the way in which we will continue to have clashes of lifestyle until we decide to do something definitive in terms of examining ourselves and changing the way we live in the world. And of course, you know, this year's Burning Man, Mother Nature had the final say.
Despite the protest holding it up for hours.
So Mother Nature said, I can do a protest even better.
Yeah, that's true.
Talking about climate change, yeah.
Yeah. Here you go. How you like me now? You are listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the city, 91.9 in White Salmon, Washington, Hood River, Oregon, in the Columbia River Gorge, along the Willamette River Valley in Philomath, Oregon, Corvallis, Albany. It is 104.3 and everywhere in the world, www.kboo.fm. So the phone number is 503-231-8187. And join us in the conversation. And this is kind of like a little broad topic, so I can appreciate if it might seem a little bit hard to kind of grab a handle on. And, you know, yes, we know that we know the United States has imperial overreach. We know that we're trying to get down, I guess, drill down a little bit deeper, though, not just in terms of the trauma that people suffered behind it, but how do we deal with the fact that recognizing this whole concept of safety and an undisturbed way of life and trauma on delay, because I don't think all our chickens come home to roost, but how that all affects us and how we try to negotiate the fact that this position we have ourselves in the United States is not a tenable situation. It's not a permanent situation. And I think we'll probably see maybe some other retaliatory aggression. Did I clean that up enough?
I believe so. And okay. Again, our numbers are 503-231-8187. And let's see what some of Naftali has to say. Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
First off, I want to start off by saying how much I appreciate you both. I always learn something every time I tune in.
Thank you.
As I was listening, I was kind of struck by something that you said intersects all of these different areas that we're talking about, the climate protests, the 9/11 attacks, and, of course, the Chilean coup, and that is the fact of the people that are caught in the middle of bigger issues that are kind of, in a sense, out of our hands. And that's most of us, I think. And I think that that's, like, when I think of the 9/11 attacks, I think of, like, the people that were working in the towers, the firefighters, the people who are just trying to do their jobs, and folks on the planes. I think of the innocent Chileans that were affected by the dictatorship, and I've met a few of them over the years. And yeah, like as you mentioned, like the folks going into Burning Man that were just trying to provide for themselves and their families. And I think, you know, like everything else, that's the biggest thing that gets overlooked a lot. And I think that's one thing I do my best to focus on when I think about things like this, is just the regular people caught in the middle.
Yeah.
Thank you both. Appreciate you. Love you both. Appreciate what you do.
Hey, thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you for your call.
Thank you, Celeste, for first raising it, and thank you, Naftali, for raising up the voices of ordinary people and the impact. Speaking of ordinary people, let's go to Santiago.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I mean, I don't know. In terms of the Burning Man thing, I just wanted to say, you know, I think, you know, it's right that it was, you know, talking about it being gentrified, because, you know, I think when Burning Man started, you know, it was started with a conscience, with a mindset of being awake and alert of what's going on in the world. But as the young anarchists or whoever was out there, you know, as people get older, it's like they lose that, you know, if they don't have anything to stoke that fire, it kind of wanes, you know, kind of goes down. So it goes from being a space to be awake to a space for being asleep. And I think if more people had been awake and alert to the weather conditions and things shifting, that maybe wouldn't have so many people stranded out there. You know what I mean? Yeah. It seems like it was like, oh, well, you know, it's going to be, yeah, everything's going to be all right. But, you know, sometimes it isn't. But I think that's the price we pay sometimes for just not being alert. But also in terms of, 9/11, you know, I posted this morning, you know, I call it Boomerang Day, because
you call it what?
I call it Boomerang Day.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. because there was a great comic that showed the Twin Towers being hit, but instead of planes, it was boomerangs, and on the boomerangs it said U.S. Interventionist policy. Mm-hmm. And
chickens came,
you know,
home to
and
roost.
I think,
the chickens came home to roost.
That's just like Jeremiah Wright said, the imperialist chickens come home to roost. That's exactly what it is. And I think the people who get, you know, and, you know, posting all buildings matter, you know, it's just like we're taught not to forget these things that affect the empire and the imperial bloc, but they don't talk about the scores of innocent people who were caught in that crossfire of trying to restore or solidify U.S. hegemony. It's like, you know, really, you know, really being, you know, really thinking that, you know, the U.S. was completely, you know, that the U.S. is almost impervious, you know, that we can go out and attack all the black and brown countries and have nothing come back on us. And, you know, to even see, like, people who would consider themselves liberals and progressives, you know, like, oh, you know, this was a time when we united as Americans. Like, no, the country united as bigots. Mm. You know, I mean, it wasn't. I mean, there's nothing American. I mean, well, I mean, I take that back. It is American. It's just not the American that people like to associate with America. It's the bigotry and the, you know, is it's the fascistic, you know, line that it takes is very American. You know, and I see people who, you know, black and brown folks who say we must never forget. And it's like, well, bro, they forgot about you. You know, like, they've always been forgetting about you. Every black and brown person I know that served just about has some sort of soft spot for American patriotism. But it's like, they have no soft spot for you. You know, like, I don't see why. I mean, I see why we're mourning in a sense that, like, we need to, you know, that the five, you know, it was like 5,000 people died that day. But at the same time, it was like, you know, but I mean, other than the lives lost there and the lives lost when America and its allies attacked innocent people in the Middle East, like, what is there to really remember? You know, we should be trying to pull lessons from it. And it's like, people just want to keep playing on those emotions. And I find it really sickening, you know, but I mean, that's a lot of what binds the country together in so many ways, is just like a shared delusion of what America is supposed to be, well, and not seeing it for what it really is.
Yeah, well, if that raises an interesting question for me, Santiago, in terms of I think the term you used was shared delusion, because it seems to me that we continue to have to recreate these myths. I was read a book recently about the Western expansion, so-called Western expansion to Washington and Oregon. And the myth we created to justify imperialism, and to continue, we need to recreate these things time and time again. So, you know, I don't want to not acknowledge the grief and the sorrow and the hurt and the pain that people experiences, but it seemed to me that it comes a time, you know, every few decades when we have to have these events to so-called unite us under the empire's banner, which is, I don't think that's the right thing to do.
No, it's not at all. You know, I think you're right about that. I mean, you know, and I find it really, I mean, I guess not troubling, but it's just like, for people who consider themselves progressives and liberals, like, the, you know, there's like, oh, you know, bigotry is un-American. It's like, well, America was founded on bigotry. I mean, I've got scores of cousins from back in the day who were, you know, who were murdered, you know, after the Treaty de Guadalupe Hidalgo, you know, after the peace treaty that took half of Mexico, you know, like they killed Mexican women and children. They killed other indigenous women and children in the process of trying to grab that land that was, you know, what we call Aslan. You know, they you know, it's like when they talk about the Texas Rangers. You know, we say we have a phrase for them in Spanish. You know, it's I can't say the whole thing on the air, but you know, but the Rinches, you know, but they yeah, man, you know, they lynched people. They went out and just, you know, killed scores of people, families, you know, treaty families who the land was held in trust, murdered them, you know, in cold blood to take the land. So I mean it's like, but it's so delusional, because like we, you know, we're like saying, like, you know, like Martin Luther King was a part of this, you know, great American freedom and justice, but it's like when he was alive and could speak for himself, they had nothing good to say about him. Now that he's been assassinated and co-opted, they can say all they want about him, and he would have been a great moderate American Republican. Like, you out of your mind. But yeah, yeah, man, you know, it's the shared delusion is really what we're fighting against in a lot of ways. We're fighting ghosts.
Yeah.
Things that are, you know, like, they seem scary, but the second you turn on the lights, they disappear.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, thank you so much for sharing today, and I appreciate your perspective and the ability to help us uncover these myths. Have a great day, Santiago.
Yeah, hey,
you too. Thank you.
And let's go to Francis. Good morning, Francis.
Hi. Speaking of delusion, I recall when Allende was killed, and I was a young woman then. I remember that anyone who spoke about it was dismissed as being a radical.
Wow.
And it was never really acknowledged. And now today it really isn't by the government. It's just people speaking out and telling the truth. But while we're under the illusion that we are such a great country, I always have to bring it back to right here in River City. And I just heard this morning that approximately 80 to 90 young juveniles have been held in the former death row facility at Angro Prison in Louisiana.
Mm.
And a federal judge has ordered them to be released by September 15th. Mm. But I want to know, these are juveniles. None of them have been actually convicted of anything. They've been determined to be juvenile delinquents. How, in 2023, in the United States of America, young people, they're primarily young black males, are being held in a solitary confinement facility. It's like, how is that allowed to happen?
Yeah.
That's what I want to know.
And this isn't only in the Angola prison. It's happening, as you well know, in institutions in every state.
Throughout the country. And how is there not an outrage about that?
Well, because these are people we want to discard, and in fact that we do. So
and that, to me, that's just heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And I think, put myself in the position of one of those young people, and my God, how do we expect them to ever become social when this is how they're treated? I just am just thoroughly heartbroken that this happens. And as long as we're going to talk about the grand United States and all of the things we do for democracy, then let's fix that first.
I think so. And I just hope, you mentioned that your heart is broken, and I just hope that more people's heart are broken, so that we don't continue to ignore these things. Maybe people do that because that's how they manage, you know, because life is hard enough, but I don't think we can ignore it.
Right.
Go
ahead.
I was going to say, Francis, one of the things, and I know I'm about to sound really cynical when I say this, but there is no expectation from these people that these young people become socialized or be able to be their full selves and be their
and why
fully
is that?
Actualized productive selves, because they want them in the prison. They want them removed.
Why?
For various reasons. I mean, if nothing else, they become
cheap labor.
Indentured workers. You know?
But that's it. People in prison are collateral. They don't even have to work.
Well, you know,
being in the prison, they make money off of the
fact
that they've got
people in there.
That's
right. But that's what I'm saying. They're not allowed.
Where is that mentality that allows that? Where is the mentality that allows that to happen? Where are these people's minds to even think that that is okay? That's what I want to know.
Well, when you look at somebody like DeSantis, who even wants to defy education and say that good things came out of slavery. You learned a useful trade. And it's like, are you serious? This was a 400-year institution. When did somebody get free and be able to apply this trade? But he didn't care. He doesn't care. These people, they don't care. And they're sitting right in front of us.
I want somebody to ask him straight out what woke means to him. Because I don't think
he
knows
again?
What it means. I want him to define woke.
Well, yeah.
He never has. He never has. He just uses it.
Right.
Yeah. Know what it means.
I also want to acknowledge, in terms of Frances, you mentioned, I believe you or Celeste, in terms of mentioning slavery in terms of prison, and I think it's also mindful of all of us to acknowledge and reflect on the 13th Amendment, which was the amendment to end slavery as we knew it in the United States. It states in part, neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted.
And the 14th Amendment was supposed to fix that. The 14th Amendment was supposed to fix that, but it did not.
It did not.
Because the process has never been equal, ever.
And as you mentioned, Frances, a lot of these young people are being held. They haven't been convicted.
No, they're determined to be juvenile delinquents. Yeah. And that's, to me, I don't even know what to call it.
Don't even need to talk
disgusting.
About access to good legal
but
counsel.
We're the United States of America, you know, and we're going around the world telling people how to run their countries.
We do that because we want to, well, not the average person, I hope not the average person, but we've been brainwashed into believing that is our divine right, you know, that we're number one. And we got to tell everybody else how to live so we can stay number one.
It's American corporations' right to exploit and take all the resources of someone's country. That's the right that apparently is being. Anyway, you guys take
our manifest destiny. All right. Thank you for your call.
Yeah, thank you, Frances. I was going to say that it was at first I thought it was a little bit disheartening listening, but I think it's useful because sometimes the truth is hard to hear, but I need to hear it. And the fact that that people continue to suffer and that our government continue to treat people not only within the United States, but indeed throughout the world, that it is our right to demand people obey what the powers say. And unfortunately, as Frances and others pointed out, ordinary people continue to suffer. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, which is, what is it?
KBOO Portland.
90.7 and via the World Wide...
Here in the city. www.kboo.fm via the World Wide Web. There you go.
All right. So,
yes.
So we began our conversation this morning by by making some simple observations, something as an annual journey to the desert, Burning Man, and the clash of cultures in many ways. We also talked about a little bit about the anniversary of 9/11, the Chilean, the coup in Chile, and the attack. I'm trying to think of the right words. Well, the attack, I guess, in the United States.
Well, somebody attacked.
Somebody did something, right?
Yeah, somebody did. Now we can debate it, and I know a lot of people do, and still do.
Right.
And there's been a lot of information uncovered, but the fact is, it was an attack.
And
there it was.
People suffered and died. So one more time, our numbers are 503-231-8187, and we will hear from Mark at this time.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for a great discussion. There's a beautiful mural on, I think, 10th and Lovejoy in southwest downtown Portland. It says, "Troubled hearts can heal."
Mm.
That's a great perspective. You know, we are a country of unanswered questions. I wonder whether people have read or have heard of the book The Power Elite by C. Wright Mills. He wrote it in 1956, and it's a very detailed, very convincing explanation of how power and decisions are just concentrated in the super rich. I'm very impressed with George Orwell's idea that our memory is under attack, that a mist lies over all things, that the past is erased, and that the erasure is forgotten, and that the lie replaces the truth. To me, people like Trump and DeSantis are just examples of how the lie replaces the truth. To think of removing books that mention slavery so that students have a good disposition is very absurd. That's an attack on history, attack on our memory. I wonder if you could comment on that.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's not just an attack on history and memory. What it is it's an attack on awareness and alertness, and oh God, am I going to say that word? Being woke, you know, it's to keep us complacent and night. It's a form of soma, to borrow a term out of Brave New World, where you took your tranquilizer so you were agreeable.
Yes. The elites are so obsessed with keeping their privilege and their power that they block social housing in city after city. And, you know, in going through Portland, it's so sad that we seem to be oblivious. Maybe we're afraid of solving the homeless crisis for fear that all the homeless would come to Portland. You know, the tiny homes is a part of the solution, but we seem so helpless. You know, I lived in California and seemed like the people were in internalized rage after Reagan, Duke Majan, and Wilson. Each Republican governor vetoed more bills than the ones before, so people are in a helpless kind of state, you know. We're just helpless in terms of attacking or taxing the super rich and designing a windfall profits tax.
Yes. And I think we are helpless until we decide we are not helpless.
Yes.
And
very good.
And then we begin to make change.
Yes, troubled hearts can heal.
Hey, exactly. Troubled hearts can heal. Thank you for pointing out that mural. I'll look it out next time I'm in that part of the town, as
very
well
good.
As the power elite. Okay.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a great day. And we will go next to Corey. Good morning, Corey.
Good morning, Corey.
Hey, good morning. Good to hear from you two. I'll be kind of brief. I'll take you off through there. One sec. Okay. So just, you know, it's 9/11. I remember where I was when this happened. I think most people do. I do want to just say three things. I remember I'm one of those 9/11 sort of veterans. I got out the military and I was working in law enforcement, and then 9/11 happened, and I thought it was my quote-unquote duty as a brown person, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the part, now that I'm a grown, you know what, man, it was all based on a lie, you know. And also, we didn't even attack, you know, this was these were people from Saudi Arabia, you know, Wahhabi-backed terrorists, et cetera, et cetera. And yet, Joe Biden, you know, MSN's whatever his name is, hand yesterday. So it you know, it is
right.
What it is, but I think that we have to realize that it was based on a lie. And so I as much as I can mourn what happened to the people, because that was a tragedy, the attack afterwards was not based on fact. The second part is Donald Trump. I remember watching Donald Trump on CNN talking about, you know, after the towers fell, well, I guess my building is the tallest building now, some people say. Like, who cares? That, to me, was just so disqualifying. He's such a narcissist and just a malignant narcissist that, like, I would never vote for that man. But then that ties to the final point, is just this social identity disorder that many people have, to where people like Trump or this Vivek Ramaswamy, you know, they're considered quote-unquote patriots, but I'm African-American. I will never be considered a patriot because of my skin color. And that is tied into, you know, like, I actually served this country, but I'm not a quote-unquote real veteran. I go to the VA here in Seattle, and I see the guys who walk around, and I appreciate them. You know, they walk around with their hats. But usually if I go there, I'm wearing a suit because I just got off of work. And they look at me funny, like, why aren't you wearing your hat? I'm like, because I get free medical care here, but my situation and your situation might be different. You know, my experience in the military might be different than your experience in the military, but that goes to that social identity disorder where, you know, if you're a veteran, you're supposed to, you know, Trump, America, this and that. I remember being called the N-word when I joined the military. So I think that, you know, people don't like to hear the truth. They just want to make things that are easy, and it causes a discomfort when you say that, oh, 9/11, I can mourn people, but also the fact that we went to a war was a lie, that makes people feel uncomfortable, but it's still the truth.
Yes.
And so as uncomfortable as some people might feel, I'm sorry, but facts are facts. And, you know, and so I sort of mourn this day, but I'm also like, yeah, I mourn this day, but I'm also glad I got out of the military when I did, because I had lots of friends who went to the military same as I did, and didn't come back, and once again, it was still based on a lie, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm. Well,
at the very least, it's a lie. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Corey.
Thank you both.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have Joan next. Good morning.
Hello. I would just like to bring this back to your original premise about the climate and 9/11, which is that after the 9/11 happened, I heard a commentator say that the greatness of this country really has nothing to do with us. It has to do with the land itself. This is a big, beautiful piece of land that has enormous variation in ecosystem, and we've never had famine here. We've never had famine. And that's the strength of America. And as long as we keep messing with the land and destroying the ecosystem, we are destroying what makes America great. And we should be appreciating and saving what's here if we really want to have a strong country, because we're on a piece of territory. And that's the point. That's what makes us strong. It's not something we can take credit for, but we can take the blame if we let it be destroyed. And that's my comment.
Well, before you go, I have a question, though. Here's a challenge for a lot of people when we talk about the land. We're okay with letting people who are not from this country buy up a lot of land in the U.S., and many other countries don't do that. And we're told, well, that's the American way. You know, we should be able to sell our land to the highest bidder. And then another concern about the land is the fact that this land we call ours, not only did we take it from somebody else, but we keep taking it away from people. There are a lot of minority farmers who are losing their land left and right, sometimes being sold to people from other countries.
That's right.
So, you know, when we talk about a land, that's a complex issue because it starts with that thing called R. You know, O-U-R, our land. Who is the us?
It doesn't belong to us. I mean, we can safeguard it, or we happen to be living here. But when you think bringing it back to the guy whose name begins with T that I hate to pronounce, what business is he in? He's in real estate, isn't he?
Among other
things. And Oregon
at this
moment, we are being sold to the highest bidder. And what are we going to do about that? And you can, anybody out there who's got any real estate investment, look at what you're invested in. And who's coming in to Oregon and buying up pieces of it? Not somebody coming in and buying a house. Oh, man, now I'm on my rant. But it's not just that. It's also the farming and the mining and everything else that we're doing in the pursuit of profit. We're destroying what some people would say belongs to God. It doesn't belong to us. And we're supposed to share it.
Yep.
And that's the root of a lot of it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
you are correct. Yeah. Thank
mm-hmm.
you.
That was just what I wanted to say. Thank you very much. Bye bye.
Thank you,
Joan. All right. Thank you for your call. Mm-hmm.
And
it is 8:55, and as Cecil was just about to say, you're listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland 90.7. We got maybe two more minutes for another call at 503-231-8187.
For those of you who are listening live on this, the 11th of September, continue to stay tuned for the program following us, the Omo Variety Hour, Street Art with the Face of Victor Hala. Give us your strength and bravery to struggle, and program talking about 9/11 and what it means, the other 9/11 that we mentioned here, as well as other programming, looking at things such as the 60th anniversary on the March on Washington. This and other program news here on your community radio station, which you can be a member of. So go to kboo.org, click on the donate button, and become a member of this community to help us help change the world. Wow.
Well, not just help us change the world, but help yourselves, you know, change your world.
Ooh. Indeed.
You know, and speaking of that, we mentioned at the top of the show the Urban League and their upcoming event, and we're expecting to have members of the Urban League on More Talk Radio within the next two shows to discuss the coming event.
So stay tuned as we continue to let you be aware of things that are happening in your community, both near and far.
Yes, yes. Well, now it's 8:58.
And I think we have to leave, perhaps, because I hear in the background some music. Is that correct? Is that what I hear, Ray? I'm hearing music. Hey, Celeste, we have to go. Have a great day.
Everybody have a wonderful day. Enjoy the sunshine. And to borrow the phrase from Spike Lee and slide in the face of DeSantis, wake up.
Wake up.
And stay woke here on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland.
This is Norman Solomon saying that you're listening to non-commercial, listener-sponsored, volunteer-driven community radio, KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month only, the Governance and Policy Committee will meet on Tuesday, September 12th at 6 p.m. instead of the third Tuesday. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Can't get good reception of KBOO on your radio?